This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Oh, hi, everybody. Another edition of the Brock and Salk podcast. Howdy's here. Kyle's here. Brock's here. I'm here. The gang's together. First time we've had to do one of these the week of a Seahawks loss for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was rooting pretty hard for the Saints on Sunday. I know there was some discrepancy out there. I know there were Seahawks fans torn. Some were greedy and thinking, no, you just need to root for the Niners.
Oh, that's a big
Niners. And then take care of business. And I mean,
what?
You were?
Oh, go Niners. They took care of business, did just what we needed.
Nope.
And now no. The NFC is lined up for the Hawks, baby.
I was pulling pretty hard for the Saints in that game. And
so was I. I was actually watching it at the Student Union Building in Pullman, Washington.
Oh, welcome to
where
the
we did our fake day.
No wonder nothing went your way.
What did we do? What did we
lame
call
day.
Our lame day? I did it. Remember
oh,
when
yeah.
we did lame
I remember
day
lame
years
day.
Ago? Right yeah. there. They got a big old big screen, and I was watching it with a bunch of gray hairs and a couple students that should have been studying for finals. But yeah, I was watching that. I was getting mad. I had to get up and down. And I went and got Panda
did
Express.
Did you get mad when they scored too early?
Yes.
Like, yeah, you scored too early.
I got
of course,
mad
the other team's going to go back and kick a field goal, you idiot.
Stupid penalties.
Yeah.
Got mad at Sean Payton whining about a penalty that was actually all of that stuff. I'm just mad. Mad! And then thinking, okay, well, good. I'll
I'm
get
sure
back.
It all got better later in the day when the Seahawks played.
I'll get back from my road trip. I totally turned the phone off. I had no idea. We were just listening to country music, other podcasts. Haley and I on our trip home, which you've done how many countless times?
Drive. You were going through Whew. Dusty. You hit Washtenaw. Out to Othello.
Othello. Royal City. Yep. The whole
Take the Vantage Bridge on home to Ellens.
Here we go. Yep. Country roads.
Six towns.
Let me right
miles.
Back home. Yes. And I was thinking... Right? And I did. I turned everything off and got right back like, okay, this is going to pick my spirits up. And then you watch that. And that, man, that's the worst game in a long time.
That's what I said. I said that.
That's just the team game. That's the
awful.
Worst team game in a long, long time.
It unfortunately made me think of one of the famous sound bites of sort of sports radio lore that I don't like that much. This is one of my least favorite.
Is this you?
No. Oh. No, there are all these great, you know, you've got the I'm a man, I'm 40, and that's the big, it's the Big 12. Like, you got all these great ones. My least favorite of all of them is probably the one that fits the most here, though.
If you want to crown them, then crown their
Whoa.
But they are who we thought they were. And we let him off the hook.
Well, I don't know if they let him off the hook, but is possible that the Seahawks are who we thought they were?
Oh, I thought you meant the Rams.
No, I mean, we let the Seahawks off the hook all year.
No, I just, are they who they thought who we thought they were?
No, they're fine.
Are they?
Yes, they're fine.
Are they?
They're totally fine.
Okay.
They got nothing to worry about.
Okay, good. Great. Perfect.
I'm just not worried, neither am I.
All right, so that was the Brock and Salk podcast, number 10. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Everything is fine. Everything is okay. We'll just move forward.
This is the meme with a dog and the coffee
yeah, exactly.
cup and the house is on fire. This is fine.
Everything is...
Answer the question, jerk, next.
Everything is just totally fine. They're at least something closer to who we thought they were. Look, throughout the year, the Seahawks... I don't want to exaggerate this. I want to try to be accurate about it. Throughout the year, the Seahawks have looked like a 10-6 team. Is that fair to say? They haven't been bad. They don't look like a 6-10 team or anything, although early in the year we could make that argument that if Russell wasn't there, we were talking, oh, they're a 2- or 3-win team without Russell. Well, we'll get to Russ here in a couple of minutes. Over the course of the first, this was what, game 11? So over the course of the, or game 13.
Oh,
over the course of the first 12 games.
7-15.
Shut up.
21-7.
Over the course of the first 12 games.
Let me help you out here. They're 10-3.
They looked like a 10-6 team, don't you think? They got a couple of breaks that allowed them to you know, win two games with missed kicks late. Mm-hmm. They you know, made one more play than the other team did in a few other games.
They let a couple games get closer than they should have.
Yeah, they played generally like a team that is a 10-6 wild card kind of team.
Mm-hmm.
And yet their record was 10-2 heading into that game. And so, look, I'm not saying I think they're likely to lose their final four games and all of a sudden be 10-6 when it's all said and done. But I don't think they were likely to go 14-2 either, just based on the quality of team they were. So this game was a little different. It wasn't their silly mistakes that cost them in this game. They didn't play well enough for those things to matter.
Mm-hmm.
They just got smacked.
Mm-hmm.
They got smacked in every phase of the game and on nearly every play of the game. And while the final score wasn't as bad as the Rams game a few years ago where they did the same thing to them, and it wasn't as bad, that Jacksonville loss a few years ago still sticks with me as like the worst of the Pete Carroll era because of just how they got that physically beaten down in that game. But they got beat on nearly every play in this game, and it really cost them.
Yet that opening drive, they go right down the field. You're like, nice.
Well, they got right down the field to the 20.
Yes.
They didn't go all the way down the field.
No, they didn't. But it was a six-minute drive. Yeah, I loved it, man. I loved they came out.
Good balance.
A bunch of play action, some runs, some movement. Like, it was awesome. And then it stalls. You kick a field goal. You're like, okay, that's all right. On the road, six-minute drive, shorten the game, minimize possessions. Let's go. Now let's get after Jared Goff. And man, did Sean McVay have a plan that just slapped Pete and Ken right in the face.
Yeah, so why, I got like five or six different potential options/factors, reasons why they lost this game. And I think they're probably all true to some extent and some more than others. I wanted to just kind of run through them with you and not just determine which ones mattered, but also like which ones are preventable moving forward and which ones are actual major issues that are going to keep being an issue for them over the next 3 weeks or so. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. So number
one. By the
way,
you look great in your holiday sweater.
Thank you.
I'm not going to call it a Christmas sweater because, well, you lost that and you lost the whole Mr. Christmas thing last week.
It was also not a Christmas sweater. It's white and black.
And why the heck were you mad at us for just sending? You wanted to know whether or not this really did happen.
Right.
Kyle sends you the tweet, and you're still mad days later. Like,
a
why
couple things. Here's my 4-point synopsis of why
totally
you should be uncredited.
Yes. Like, why were you mad at us days later?
No, because you were trying to say that the place I bought the tree was a problem, and that picture was from the year before we started going to to the farm where we get our tree now.
Which, by the way, also proves you've only been to this tree farm like twice.
Three times. This was our
three
third
times.
Year there.
Right.
This was our third year.
Of the time you go here, you get
well,
ruined
now,
trees.
Well, do you think it's so our tree is continuing to droop a little? Heather was looking at it last night.
Like, you have a tree, a bird in the tree?
No guy? Bird. No, it's bird free, thank God.
Oh, you remember that happened too, right?
I remembered when Kyle told me. Okay. If you had asked me, was there a bird in your tree, I would have said no.
Right.
But then when you were like,
bird in the house,
there was a bird
time.
In the tree, like, oh yeah, I do. I never saw the bird. I was never home for it.
Right.
So I think that's why I don't really
so
remember.
So you can't be expected.
Can't be expected to remember.
I didn't see the bird.
And yet, I was talking to my parents last night, and I correctly like remembered things from when I was 3 years old that they couldn't remember.
Interesting.
That's sort of what Alzheimer's is.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay, sorry.
That's how it goes. That's how what happened to my grandmother. So I guess it's only a matter of time here.
You know, Mike, that raise we were talking about last week, I'm really thankful that you did that for me.
Yeah.
That was just so good.
Yeah. Call payroll. See if they can
all
work
right,
that out.
So you got five or six
I got a
questions
bunch of
here. All right.
Number one, the Rams are just a nightmare matchup for them.
Yes.
The speed on offense and the speed on their defensive line are just an antidote to all of the Seahawks' strengths.
Yeah, I had said this week on the morning show, jumping on with Danny and Paul a couple different times. Like, Russell's mental training is, speaking of minds and memories, is off the charts. His ability to flush and move on. Out of 31 teams in the league, the only one he has significant scar tissue against are the Rams. Like, it is the only one. And I don't know how much Jedi mind tricks and training and positive thoughts and everything else he does going into that game.
Packers.
But the minute he gets under center and he smells Aaron Donald, he's like, oh, no. It doesn't matter who's in front of me. It doesn't matter if it's Fluker, if it's Posick, if it's Upati, whoever it's been through the years. Like, that guy owns him, as he does most in the league. He's still the best, single best game-wrecking defensive player in the NFL. And he loves playing Russell. He loves playing Pete. He loves playing 350-pound offensive guards.
Wow.
And even if they've got to take three of them to try to block him, then it sets up for everybody else that day. And that's the one team that has smacked them around on their D-line. And I think the one team that truly Russell has a bit of scar tissue against. So matchup on
come back to that part of it. I felt like the worst matchup was the other way, with just those, you know, with Goff getting outside the pocket and then those wide receivers just running those crossing routes all day and the little flip motion plays and all, like,
so their
it
scheme.
Seems like those just
so both yes, both their personnel and their scheme matchup wise are terrible.
Okay, so is that a factor moving forward? Are there other teams that are
will
similar?
Carolina put in the jet sweep this week? Yes. Yeah, they will. But
are they good at it?
No.
Right.
No, they don't major in it. They will minor in it. Will San Francisco look at that game film? 1,000%.
They can do some of that stuff.
They do.
They can run all those
crossing
routes. They
use more motion than anybody else anyway. So, yes, in a couple weeks, if they get through these next two and can find ways to win, you are going to see, because they do it naturally.
Can Jimmy Garoppolo do some of the same? I don't think Goff is a great quarterback, but I do think he's pretty good at those little quick rollouts and hitting crossing routes across the middle.
Yes. Will Garoppolo do the same? Yes.
Can he do that?
Yes. Could you have done that? Yes. Yeah, you could have got out the pocket. Yeah, that. Pretty close. Maybe not all the way. Could Heaps and I have operated in that system in the first half, as open as those dudes were all over the place and felt confident? Yes. And that was going to be the whole key.
Can you roll out and run like that, though?
Could I?
Yeah.
I was decent back in the
really?
Day.
Really? Could you throw on the run like that?
Yeah, pretty decent.
You strike me as sort of a statue.
Yeah, I was.
Like better from the pocket.
Certainly as I've gotten older, right. I've gotten like Medusa. You know, like, you look at me and I, you know, turned to stone.
Second one is that the defense, and this sort of relates to what you said about Aaron Donald, because I don't entirely agree with you on the Aaron Donald scar tissue thing.
Okay.
That's true when the Seahawks have gotten behind or when they've forced it to become a passing game. But when they have taken advantage of Aaron Donald and the fact that he is not the greatest run stuffer in the world and they have some big bodies, the Upadis and Flukers and in the past Brits, you can just move him physically and run right at him.
280 pounds. Yes, you can.
And they started off trying to do that. And you have this first drive, as you mentioned, where they go down the field. The problem is the defense was so bad early. Mm. They got down 14-3 and then even worse than that, they allowed Aaron Donald. He didn't become a factor until late in the first half into the second half.
Correct.
Once the Seahawks had to change their game plan for the day and become a passing team instead of a balance/run team, then Aaron Donald became a factor. Why? Because their defense was atrocious at the beginning of the game.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree on all of that. I don't even think there's really much debate or conversation. You could not fall behind to that team. If you became one-dimensional against them,
you lose.
You are going to lose. And the Baltimore Ravens did not. The teams that have owned them this season have not. And, right, the game plan and the recipe was there. The Ravens showed it to you a month ago. They embarrassed them. They ran right at them. They hammered them. They did everything that you said you can do to that undersized, speedy group. But they got up and they got ahead and they crushed them.
So is that likely to be an issue moving forward?
With the 49ers?
See, I would say no. I don't think this is a huge...
If you become one-dimensional against those you've got no chance.
But the Seahawks have shown throughout this year that they can get down. They got down to the Niners. I mean, they've shown an ability to get down and come back against other teams. I just think the Rams are specifically designed and built to give them a problem when they do that. So while it was a problem on Sunday night, I don't see that necessarily as a major problem moving forward, unless they play the Rams again. Somehow the Rams sneak into the playoffs and they have to play them again.
Well, New Orleans, San Francisco, you know, the elite teams that can pin their ears back and have dudes that wreck 4 versus 5, that won't be a problem.
Yeah, and yet when they got down, when they got down big to the Saints is when they had their biggest offensive success.
And then it was 10-7 against San Francisco, right? They got the defensive touchdown and never got out of hand like that. When the Saints
New Orleans did, and they found their way back into that one because of their ability to deal with that. So I don't know. I'm not as concerned with that as maybe some of the other things. Third one, and this one's going to be a huge concern for me. Their pass rush was once again non-existent. Mm-hmm. After a couple of weeks of showing up and doing what it needed to and affecting the other team's quarterback, was it there?
Second half, it sure played a role, right? It led to a pick six. It affected another interception. I mean, it led to two takeaways in the second half. Oh, yeah, Shaquem Griffin's right in Goff's face on that pick six. You know, he couldn't see. He had to get rid of the ball. The other interception, I mean, they had an effect in the second half. The first half, zero, zip, zilch. And I credit Sean McVay. I credit their tempo. I credit their movement. I credit getting those guys on their heels an awful, awful lot. There was no Ziggy Ansah. There was none of that rotation. You don't feed off the home crowd, which they're going to get twice, and it's going to be rather dormant in Charlotte on this Sunday. So I'm not as concerned there. Between, I think, some of the depth of their rotation when Ziggy comes back and Jaron Reed and God bless Jadeveon Clowney, who's playing through a significant injury, to still crank it up and do all that he can do. So, yeah, to me, that was a ton of scheme in that first half that really had an effect. And I know there was not a ton of sacks and hits and hurries, but there were a couple in that second half, and I liked. I like Shaquem playing end.
Yeah, although he seemed to get tossed.
Oh, he's going
one
to
play where he just got thrown like 8 yards.
Yes,
don't worry about that.
And
but he did play better.
Yeah,
but here's
he provides
the thing,
a little juice.
When they were able to generate a little pass rush in the second half, it came at the expense of giving up screens, giving up draws, giving up the little what do you call it?
Jet sweeps. Yep.
I mean, so yes, they were eventually able to sell out in order to generate some pressure, but when they did, it left them really vulnerable to three types of plays that burned them.
Yes.
So I will say that goes back to being a number one in my worry department.
Okay.
What the heck? How are you going to generate a pass rush? All right, this next one's a little uncomfortable.
Oh no.
It's a little uncomfortable.
What's going on?
My tree's still droopy.
No, it's not about the tree.
It's about Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Because
he was once again mediocre, and that's like four in a row. That's four mediocre. I'm not going to say bad. Russell was not bad in this game. I don't think he's been bad
Minnesota,
in any game.
He was all right.
He was.
Philadelphia, struggle. Rams, that was a struggle.
He has been mediocre for, I think,
against
at least
Minnesota,
three.
Really? He's mediocre against Minnesota?
We talked about it last week. I thought he was
like
okay.
One or two throws the whole game against Minnesota.
He was okay. He didn't do anything special. He was good. He was okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was good. I mean, you go back the beginning of the year, and you just look at quarterback rating, and not that that's the be-all, end-all, but 134, 130, 102, 114, 151, 117. Okay, bad game against Baltimore because of the pick six, et cetera, mm-hmm. the 65. But then 131, 133, and then these last four, it drops. I mean, you can really see it. 86, 75, 98, 69. It's
since the San Francisco game.
From San Francisco on out.
And what happened in San Francisco? Tyler Lockett got.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's a big part of it. I was going to get to him next. He's the next name on my list
of
factors.
List, all right?
So we'll get to him.
We have to deal with this uncomfortability, Kyle.
Are you saying that that's just the reason that Russell's fine? It's just that without Lockett,
I'm saying
Lockett,
that it times up perfectly to that injury. I don't know for sure. I'm not Brock Heward. I don't evaluate the quarterback position. All I'm saying is that to the layman, it's like, well, when Tyler Lockett got hurt, Russell Wilson started to struggle.
And I love Brock dearly, as I think you know, but when you talk about evaluating the quarterback position, I wouldn't say it's always with like clear and unbiased view.
Brock's
when it comes
the one
to
who
Russell
got me
Wilson.
On the Andy Dalton train. You know, mm-hmm. I trust his observations.
Mm-hmm. Brock, what's going on with Russ?
In those first seven games you reference, how many significant drops were there? How many game-changing touchdown drive
I don't even
drive
remember 3
feelings.
Games ago.
DK Metcalf has
like
dropped the ball every game. I asked Jake last week, when will he become a DB?
I mean,
I'm done with him.
I mean, get out of here.
So that,
but I'm surprised he wasn't made a cornerback.
So that 86 is the start of these four. That's San Francisco, mm-hmm. and it was one underthrown pick that unfortunately was a touchdown. They win and don't go to overtime and do everything. But, you know, he was got a chance to.
His touchdown to interception himself. Ratio during that yep. four-game span is 4-4. He's thrown a pick in four straight games.
Correct.
After only throwing one in all of the
so
previous
the,
games leading up
the
to
98
it.
Was a pick that he tries to bat down. So, you know, again, you take that one out and you're at 110 against Minnesota.
Yeah, it was the pick against he tried to bat down. It was against Minnesota, a couple of missed passes.
Against Philly in the wind
easy
and rain.
Missed touchdown.
There was like 150 yards that could have been, should have been. And, yeah, he sailed one. So, yes, there have been some. He's not been elite.
He hasn't been the same player he was in the first nine.
He's not been elite as he was the first nine.
Right.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
I think that the only chance.
No, you said
Seahawks,
he's been mediocre.
All right, should I say he's been just good? Is that better? He's been just good.
The Seahawks needed him to win every single game for the first nine games of the season. Okay. He was the only way they won
and
a single
did.
Game.
He was yep. amazing.
Yet what happened after that is they started making trades. They added Quandre Diggs. Their yep. roster just got better yep. overall.
They started
and now
to run
they're
the
reverting
ball.
Back to the way they always have been, yep. where Russell Wilson is just doing what he thinks he has to do just to get by because the rest of the team is just playing better.
Started to run the ball, started to shorten the game. Like, wow, we can still find
but
ways to win
I'll
these
stop
ugly
it. I'm
games.
Not pointing at yards. I'm not saying that Russell's not racking up enough yards or anything like that. That's not mm-hmm. that's not what I'm saying here. He just hasn't been as good.
Yeah,
and he's thrown full picks in four straight games after not throwing picks. Now, I know you can kind of parse
well,
them
three
all.
Three of those are ridiculous, I would say. So, you know, I'd say Tyler Lockett, go up and catch the ball at the end of the game. Like, bro, I'm giving you a chance at a one-on-one against an average corner, and you don't even go up and get it. One is batted at the line of scrimmage
I know.
That he tries to bat down. Like, I mean, really? Those are, yes. So two of the four were bad and pretty unfortunate. It overcame one of them to win and have the best win in the NFL on the road in San Francisco in overtime.
Russell Wilson's great, Mike.
I love Russell Wilson.
All right? No, but Mike, you're right, though.
Go
he
there.
Hasn't been the same.
He hasn't been the same player.
My argument would be that they said, go win games for us. Whatever you need to do to win games, go do it. Mm-hmm. And then as the team got better and they got back to Seahawks football, he's reverting back to who he's always been.
Maybe that's
which is,
case.
I'm just going to just distribute the ball to whoever and whatever
well,
and
then
just
that,
do what it takes to
then
win.
Then that brings up the next one because as you kind of go through these, the lack of weaponry I think showed up in this one for sure. You had three drops, I think, for Turner and Hollister combined. If you include the one at the goal line where Turner didn't turn around.
Yes.
I mean, that's three bad drops. Two of them came on third down. Maybe all three of them came on third down. And once again, Tyler Lockett gives you nothing. Now, maybe he's hurt. I mean, he did get hurt in that game. He does seem like he maybe he's hobbled. Maybe they're just focusing on him mm-hmm. and forcing everybody else to beat him. Maybe it's a combination of both of those
yes,
things.
Yes.
But all of those other weapons are not showing up. DK, I thought, played pretty well against the Rams. Other mm-hmm. than that, Josh Gordon doesn't seem to be playing a major factor. We've still yet to see John Ursua. Jaron Brown is not a wide receiver.
Yet to see George Fant catch a ball, right? Which is just egregious.
He's going to have 10 in the next three games in order to get to your over-under.
Shoddy and Pete, I know you listen to this. Can you get George Fant the ball at least one time? You got to at least do it once, or they're not going to cover him at all.
You've lost Luke Wilson. You've lost Will Disley. I mean, you lost Ed Dixon. I mean, you kind of start going through that list, and you know, at some point, it's got to play a factor. Now, the flip side of it is if you're watching the Monday night game and you saw what Carson Wentz did with dudes who are not even close to being good enough to make the Seahawks roster.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like that Ward guy and some dude named Boston something. Like, I mean, he went out there in the second half. Like, now, granted, he's playing a really, really bad New York Giants team. But you see that sometimes, you know, you can help guys rise above that. And I think Russell's done that
throughout
the year.
For 12 weeks, they've done it.
That's right.
For 12 weeks, they've done that.
But it's shown up the last few.
Jacob Hollister against Minnesota caught 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 9. He was amazing.
Yeah.
They don't win that game against Minnesota without him. Malik Turner's had some huge plays this year.
Oddly,
I mean, eventually they're going to regress to the mean a little bit, are they not?
Mm-hmm.
Are they not guys that have basically been street free agents? If Jaron Brown and Jacob Hollister, well, now that Hollister's made plays, he's probably going to get picked up. Malik Turner, these guys get cut. Are they going to, you know, no, they're league average guys who have been awesome over the course of the year, whose number have been called and they have stepped up big time.
Okay.
So they had a clunker on.
So they're likely to regress, sort of be who they are.
Maybe. Or, you know what? They had that game. They had that moment. And Malik was a fourth down drop. Malik was a red zone touchdown. Don't get your head around. Hollister was a huge third down drop when you needed to keep your defense on the sideline. So those were enormous plays.
What about Lockett?
That's the one that's got to get right. Of all of these things, and I know you've got more to discuss, like if they're going to win these next three, and win this NFC and have a bye, Tyler's got to get back to the factor he was the first 8 weeks. And I do think coming back originally in Philadelphia, he was nowhere close. He was still limping around. He still had the big, you know, bandage on his leg. He had a sickness. He lost some weight. I think he was healthier. He had a little bit more bounce in L.A. Not a great matchup. Jalen and their defense and keeping some safeties over the top of him. He's got to get right. Carolina's the perfect game for him to get right. Arizona's the perfect game for him to get right. That connection has got to grow again. And if it's got to be force-fed just a little bit, right, and say, okay, you know, we're going to force this through formations, through motions, through alignment. We're going to force-feed this to get started again. And I think you heard Tyler after the game kind of mention that, kind of hint at that a little bit, like, yeah, I'm good, I'm ready, let's go. And I know it's neat to spray the ball to David Moore and to Hollister and to Malik and get everybody going and we're a team and doesn't matter whose number's called. No, your best player when Russell was elite, your best player right next to him was Tyler Lockett.
Yeah. Like Tyler, how are you feeling personally? What's your injury situation? Are you feeling okay 100%?
I mean, I wasn't on the injury report, so you tell me what's going on.
Ooh.
Well, he didn't even intimate, did he? He kind of just came out and bluntly said it.
Oh.
I'm good. Let's go. Come on, Russ. Come on, Shoddy. Let's get number 1-6 going.
You ever heard that from Tyler Lockett ever in any capacity or any derivation of that ever?
But you know what else? You never ever saw numbers through 8-9 games for a receiver in the history of this franchise like he had going. And then he legitimately had a significant injury that kept him in San Francisco as a real deal. And he wasn't right the next week, and he did get sick, and he wasn't right those couple weeks. But now he is right, and he's got to get back on it, and he's got to be a major factor.
That one will, of all of the ones that that moving forward worry me, this one's probably tops on my list.
Didn't you have Bobby on your list somewhere?
I'm not done yet.
Oh, I'm
just got a couple other things to get to. There's a lot of factors here.
Okay.
We'll get to Bobby, I promise. He's sort
if
of
I'm going
to
do that Russ thing, and I got to exhaust all that energy to try to protect
you. You want the Bobby thing at the end? I will give you a break before we come back to Bobby.
Okay, good.
I'm not as worried about Russ. He's Russell Wilson. He's going to be fine. I am, you know, I don't like seeing the fact that for the last few weeks he hasn't been the same, but I think there's a lot of merit to what Kyle said. I think that not having your number one weapon, Tyler Lockett, healthy is a problem, or double teamed or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And those other guys haven't stepped up and certainly didn't against the Rams on Sunday night. Hopefully, you know, that doesn't continue. The next one.
Can I just say this about Russ? Cut your hair. Can I just say that to
you?
Just cut your hair. I mean, we're the look body good, image play, show. I'm not even
look good, get, feel good play. Guy.
I'm not even going to get to the body image, any of that.
So just, the same hair all year long. He was an MVP with the with that hair.
It's flopping around now. Let's just cut the hair. All right, let's just cut the
kind
hair.
Kind of with Brock on that.
No, you guys are missing it.
So old.
Look good, feel good.
You guys
play,
are what? Really what? Missing it.
Getting kidneys and cut his hair if he wants to play well.
I don't think about
no
that.
No one's going to take him seriously. No, no, floppy hair.
I don't know if we're saying that.
He gets a tattoo. We should cut him.
All right.
Next thing, he's going to wear black socks like a Fab Five. Can't have that.
Now, when he gets the fallopian tubes neck tattoo,
then we'll talk.
Felix,
then we'll talk.
Then we'll get
when he gets
okay,
the
then I'll talk.
When he puts the fallopes on the right there on the old neck, then we'll have a conversation. I promise.
All right.
So. Next possibility of kind of what went wrong in the Factor, and I didn't think about this, but Shaquille Griffin certainly did after the game and talked about it. They were just too confident. That they thought they were better than they actually are. Here's Shaq after the game.
I feel like we was on a high horse at the time. And, you know, and that's not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong, it's not a bad thing. But kind of sometimes it takes that little loss. They really feel like, you know what? We can't act like we're just the best team out there. We can't come in thinking we're automatically going to win this game. You know, we got to continue to feel the same way we're going to each game, that we have to take this W. We have to take this win. We have to come ready to play, not just hype each other up, you know, and not really have that I'm ready to play inside you. And I feel like that's where we were wrong at. We came in, you know, thinking like, okay, this game, we already got it won, you know, instead of just coming out there and playing our regular game that we do week in and week out.
All right, shout out to our friend and scratch golfer, Joe Fan, who came up with that on NBC, former intern here at 710.
Is he a good golfer?
Yeah, he is a good golfer. I don't know if he's scratch, but right. he's a good golfer and a good dude, and he found that he had that conversation with Shaquille.
Yep.
How much stock do you put into that?
The Rams were desperate. I'm not a betting man.
You're putting this on the Rams being desperate?
I can't bet. I don't bet. But when it comes to human nature, to Jim Moore's like go-to guy, human nature, the Rams played with an act of desperation and energy in their building with the back against the wall. They lose their season's over. So you're facing that opponent versus one in the Seahawks that just got to win one of their final four to make the playoffs, that, you know, have everything in front of them, that are right there at 10-2, have won all these close games, feel like, yeah, man, we're going to find a way to win. That's just what we do. We're going to find a way to win. No matter what happens, we're going to find a way to win. And you got a Rams team in their building with some really proud dudes, with one of the best corners in the game, with one of the best D tackles, if not the best in the game, with a really good running back that's coming on, with still a good left tackle, quarterback that's been paid, that's got some pride, a head coach who's been embarrassed, whose ego's been hit this year. Like, yeah, you're going to get their absolute best, most desperate shot, and you better match it. And I don't think from an energy standpoint at all, certainly out the gates defensively, they brought anywhere near that force.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's hard to do offensively. It's like kind of a baseball player, like I'm going to squeeze the bat tighter, right? We had talk about that all the time. Like you can't try harder to hit a ball. In fact, you got to kind of loosen up.
Am I
worried about that moving forward?
No, I would say that was they got their comeuppance and it's time to kind of move forward. All right, this one's another uncomfortable one. We've sort of beat around the bush a little bit on this, but what is going on with Bobby Wagner? His numbers are fine. His numbers are arguably great. He has 129 tackles so far this year. He has 72 solo tackles so far this year. He's got 2 sacks. So when you look at Bobby and just look at those numbers, he had 14 tackles against the Rams.
Those are like kickoff return yards in that game. I'm sorry. That means nothing to me. I'm sorry that, you know, you were in that position chasing down a bunch of this stuff.
That's sort of
like 7 or 8 of those. Great. Like, okay. They just gained.
He has 129 tackles. So he's going to end up with 150 plus once again. I mean, he is having statistically the kind of year you would expect from Bobby Wagner, but he doesn't look like he's making the same impact on the field, at least to my naked eye. So what's going on? Because this is the guy they bet on.
His first half was the equivalent of Russell throwing 3 picks. Let's be very clear. There's a reason quarterbacks get paid what they get paid. There's a reason they get the glory when the glory comes and they take the other side of that and all the arrows and darts, because a lot of defensive players can play an atrocious game and you don't really know it. Oh, he had 14 tackles. No, that first half was atrocious. That was really, really bad. They couldn't cover anything. They were totally in between. Pete's having to talk to him and KJ on the bench, right? They had that little shot during the broadcast. Yeah. And I guarantee you, it's like, you can't be in between and chasing everything. You've either got to see your keys and trust it and make that play, or you've got to get into some of your coverage here and not drop crossers when they're coming into zones. Actually find the people that are getting behind. Like, you've got to cover. Like, there was nobody covering anybody. I mean, they're just running free. Like, if you want to say Russell was mediocre, like, that was, man, that was some really atrocious defense, those 3 of the first 4 series with 3 touchdowns. And I know it's hard. And I know tempo is difficult. And I know you got to compensate, right? And I know there's some challenges with KJ's health and some of his burst.
Well,
and
that, that is
else.
Some of the conversation, because I was sort of making the same point as you earlier this week with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. And Stacey, I think, asked a really good question. I was like, hey, are you sure it's Bobby? Or with all of the inexperience and other issues on this team, especially on the defense, is he stuck covering for guys and that is making him unable to also make the kind of impact plays that we became accustomed to when he didn't have to worry about Earl Thomas or Richard Sherman or Michael Bennett or Cliff Averill or Cam Chancellor or anybody else.
That absolutely is part of it, I am sure. I also know when you've got to read and react to diagnose, you got to go make the play. I also know that you've got to drop in coverage and take something away. I also know that you got to come up and intimidate and hit and be a force and be an impact. And in the second half, there was a lot more of that. In the second half, he played much better. In the second half, he did have some forceful tackles. But that first half, when they gave up 21 and went up and down the field, no, that second level of the defense was absent. I mean, totally non-factor. And again, credit McVay, credit their system that has always been problematic for those guys at the second level. Remember, Earl, it was the Rams game 2-3 years ago where the whole name in the mouth thing came about. Is Bobby's trying to play with a hamstring, no chance. No chance against those guys and against that scheme. So the second half was much, much better. Am I concerned or worried about Bobby the next 3 weeks? Nope. Nope. I think he's going to play an excellent game in Carolina. I think he'll, you know, just like this was a wake-up call to some of the other guys and, you know, we just got done talking about. I'm sure 54 put that tape on in the first half. It's like, that's not me. That's not us. Like, I got to get right. This team got to get right. And you're going to see a very, very different effort the next couple weeks. Now, San Francisco game, get ready because you're going to see many of those same principles because it's what they do and it will be a major, major challenge. And let's just hope they're 12-3 when they get to that point.
Yeah, because then if you win, you're yep. you've got them.
Yeah. Is that to say that Earl can now put his name back in his mouth?
All right. You know, we don't need to.
Did you just fire that sound?
We don't need to play that, especially without Lydia here.
I mean, just fired that sound.
I don't know. It just happens from above. That's how it goes around here. I just want to make Bobby Wagner's an incredible leader and a great person, and I really like him a lot. And his contribution.
He's been a model of consistency and
he's
stability
been amazing.
This year.
So any conversation about him like this, it's difficult.
But you got to call a spade when
I think
you don't
you have
play
to.
Well. You didn't play well.
And it's been all year. It's not that he hasn't played well. It's that I haven't seen or we haven't seen those great impact plays. I don't know enough about football to know whether or not they're because he's playing slower or tentative or older or less physical or what, or whether or not there are other problems that he's covering for. I'm not going to pretend that I do, but I can see the effect, which is that you're not getting the splash plays from Bobby Wagner that you paid for with an enormous contract this offseason, and betting on him over a lot of the other guys on your defense that you let go. And I think a lot of the reason you did that was because of the personality. It's not just what he did on the field. It's the fact that he is your leader. He is the type of leader you wanted to build on moving forward, a good complement to Russell Wilson. They complement each other on offense or defense. And I honestly, truly believe that leadership of those two guys is part of the reason a 10-6 team is playing right now at 10-3. I really do believe that. It is it's not luck. That has forced them to be better than their talent has indicated. It's Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson and their leadership and their style and moving on from some of the drama. I think all of that has helped them. So I think that's why they bet on Bobby over Earl, over Richard Sherman, et cetera, over Michael Bennett. But the production still has to be
there. Well, then it better come into fruition as you respond to this adversity, much like it has this season, right? When they played poorly, they bounced back and responded. When they get hit in the mouth, they bounce back and respond. And that's what they're going to have to do Sunday in Charlotte.
Do you think I can use the word romantic without you guys making fun of me for what you think it means? Mm-hmm. Probably not, but we'll do it here in a minute. It's nice having this energized Brock around. I mean, now the college football season is over. You were finally realizing that you don't have anything to do. Like, what are you doing with yourself?
Reading
now?
A lot.
Oh, you're reading.
Yeah, I'm reading a lot.
That must be
Gladwell's
stimulating.
New book's a good one, by the way.
You've been reading that for like a month and a half.
I lost it on the plane. I had to go buy
talking
it.
Talking about
Coop
you're morphing into Malcolm Gladwell.
How long ago did you start that book?
I read like 60 pages at the end of football season, and I left it on a plane. And I was
you were
so
reading that
mad.
Book before I went to Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a month ago.
Yeah, it's at the end of football season.
Dude.
He's been busy, Mike.
At the end of football season, I started it. I read 60 pages.
Football season ended over Thanksgiving.
It ended for me a week ago.
Oh.
Yes.
So you really haven't had anything to do for a while.
Huh?
You haven't had anything to do for a while.
But I'm back reading. I'm going to read a lot of books.
Without ESPN, do you have a crazy bowl schedule this year? Like, you used to have to do like three bowls in 2 days.
GoDaddy of them all.
The GoDaddy of them all.
Well, I mean, I got the equivalent. I got the Red Box.
What's the... Oh, you can't insult the bowl you're going to cover.
What? It's okay. The Red Box bowl. Sure. I mean, it's one of the lower level bowls. It's
Fox doesn't have a revenue. Bowls.
There's a ranking system, and they are a lower ranked bowl. Yes. That's objective truth.
How many bowls does Fox have?
Two.
They only have two bowls?
Two bowls. The Holiday Bowl and the Red Box.
That's it?
Yeah, that's the only real like stinger. It's the only stinger is because obviously.
Why doesn't Fox have any bowls? Why do they, and more oddly, why do they have those two?
Because ESPN owns like 30 of them, right?
Why doesn't ESPN own those two?
And then ESPN pays a ton of money for all the New Year's Six. Fox may get in that game. After
CBS
a record, bowls? By the way, after a record-setting rating season for Fox.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Highest ever.
Big news.
Does CBS have bowls?
CBS has one, the Sun Bowl.
They have one. The, what's
they
so
have the, no, two. They have the Sun Bowl and the Cure Bowl. So they get two. Okay. Fox gets two. ESPN, ABC has everything else.
And okay. Yeah. Does NBC have any bowls?
No.
And they don't have wherever Notre Dame goes?
No.
They automatically lay claim to whatever Notre Dame has?
That's it.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so you will have the, which bowl did you say?
The Red Box Bowl.
What did that used to be? Did that have like a real name at some point?
At one point, it was like maybe the Farmer's Bowl. It was the Farmer's Almanac Bowl. Maybe it was the
Farmer's Only .com Bowl. You don't have to be lonely at FarmersOnly.com Bowl.
Have you ever gone to that?
What?
Have you ever checked on that site?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I'm a big Farmers Only guy. Yeah. Well,
Kyle, did you ever check it out of curiosity?
You know, I haven't been there. I think that's blocked at work.
Oh, good.
I've tried.
And thank God it has. All right.
So anyhow, yes, I am energized and hilarious.
What a great way for me to lead into the word romanticized. Yes. This is perfect. This has all worked out just the way I planned it. We'd get into farmersonly.com, and I would bring up my romanticized view of the winter meetings, because what a fantastic transition that
you
will be.
You love the winter meetings.
I do. And the truth of it is, I'm probably told the story before, when I was first kind of making my decision to make my way into the sports media business, it was that view of the winter meetings that was a big part of the reason. Look, I grew up a baseball fan before everything else, loved football, loved basketball, loved hockey, but baseball was always my favorite sport to watch and probably to play growing up. And at that time in my life, I mean, this is the early 2000s as a Red Sox fan at the time. I mean, like nothing was more important in the world than baseball. It felt like it was a 12-month sport. I was constantly focused on it. I knew everything about the roster and the farm system and the other teams and potential trades and contracts. I mean, I wasn't even in the sports media business, but it was I cared a lot more about it than my own job, which I would bail on every day at 3:45 to hustle and beat traffic to get to this bar and watch a game at 4:00. I mean, like it felt like everything to me. And I read Josh Lewin's book. You know Josh Lewin? He's a broadcaster. I feel like we've talked to him at some point. Josh Lewin wrote a book. He's like the Mets broadcaster, I think, or he was. He wrote a book about the winter meetings and just sort of what it was like to be there and who was there and the job seekers and the mascot people and the media and just sort of how all of it came. You know,
the agents.
Yeah, how everybody would be there once. And I was upset. I loved that book. And it was one of the main reasons why I ended up sort of quitting my job in politics and deciding to get into sports media. And then over, you know, once I kind of had like, you know, as I was a hanger on and was just sort of starting to make, not that much different from now.
When you were a stringer with the Red Sox.
Way back when.
Yeah, way back.
Hard to remember those.
Before
days.
The huge success of this podcast.
And time is a flat circle.
Before I became a member of the podcasting community, I went to 6 winter meetings. I paid my own way to the first 3 winter meetings I went to. Paid my way to Orlando, Nashville, and Vegas. And found ways to make the money back by stringing for people around the country, by just grabbing interviews and sending them to people. And I made just enough to cover my expense so that I could go to the winter meetings and start to meet. And they were really different, unique experiences. And nothing was ever more humbling than the first winter meetings I attended in Orlando. You're covering the Red Sox. There couldn't have been less than 30 members of the Red Sox press corps there. Maybe not. Maybe there was like 20. But there were a ton. And then there's me. I'm barely covering the Red Sox. I had convinced my my boss to let me go down there, and even though I was paying for it, that, okay, but you better come back with stuff. Like, what, I'm going to beat John Heyman and Ken Rosenthal and Buster Olney and break stories? Like, let alone all the tenured members of the Red Sox. Like, there's no chance. But you just go down there and do the best you can and ask questions and try to meet people. And, you know, that awkward moment of trying to ask dudes for their number, which you have to do if you want to start making, you know, connections and stuff. And, you know, 3 years into it, I still wasn't able to break any stories or be a player of any note in Boston. But it was fun. And I had met enough people over the years that, you know, when we came here, we went to a couple more. I went to another one.
Whoa. Thank you.
By we, I mean I. Got the famous trip to Indianapolis.
Yeah, you got the dual Comic-Con, the Comic-Con and winter meetings together. Yep. Yes.
Comic-Con.
Yeah.
It's a Comic-Con.
That's the red state thing that you did over there.
You did the Comic thing and then the Comic-Con and then the winter meetings. Yeah, you got to do all three wrapped up in one.
I have seen and I embarrassed myself at a couple different winter meetings and saw some truly incredible things. I mean, I saw Scott Boras walk through the lobby in the Bellagio in Las Vegas like a king.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, with like waves of people behind him before he eventually found a place to talk to the assembled media, stood up on top of either a chair or a table and like talked down to the... That's what it was. That's what it looked like. That was amazing seeing him at the top of the heap, just looking down upon the minions.
But it was a big deal. Even though I was not a passionate Major League Baseball fan, I do remember that.
This isn't that long ago.
No. It felt,
that was probably like 2007.
Was it always around this time? Was it always around early December, right? Season ends and people start to get their ducks in a row and make their managerial changes. And then boom, like this sets you up now to kind of springboard you into the winter and the spring and the building of your franchise.
It was the year, I probably told this story in the air, but it's been a long time. But the first.
Mike certainly can't remember.
The year that.
The year was 1812.
No, it was you and I doing the show, and I went to Orlando to the winter meetings. One of three times I've done it in Orlando. And I was trying to put together a round table, which ended up working out with Buster Olney, Keith Law, and Jason Stark. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. And it was great. It was really interesting. I mean, it was
a super powerhouse group.
Oh, it was awesome. And trying to get all of their schedules to line up, and it was really challenging.
No news breaks right before that moment.
And Keith and I have been friends for a long time, and Buster, you know, we had on the show all the time, and Jason was sort of the one guy I didn't know all that well at the time. So I had it all worked out, and I was looking for Jason Stark, and I was going down an escalator when I saw him right at the top. And I was, oh, no. And I turned around. I just wasn't thinking. I turned around, tried to run back up the escalator, and fell. True story.
Keep going. Okay.
When I fell, I hit my hand on, like, the corner of the escalator.
Yeah. You're bleeding.
I was bleeding. And my thumb on my left hand, which has very little skin on it because of my accident, will not stop bleeding.
No.
Okay. Well, this just stop being as funny.
No, it was just, it was. It didn't hurt. But it was bleeding, and I'm in the bathroom. I probably went through a roll and a half of toilet paper, so I couldn't get any Band-Aids or bandages. I was bleeding for like an hour and a half, like a stuck pig in the bathroom, and I just barely made it to the round table with everybody to get it done because I was just bleeding the entire time. Ugh. So like things kept going wrong for me.
Super romantic.
Yeah. My romanticized view.
Romance.
Anyway, I'll never make it to another winter meetings, I'm sure, but... they were really amazing and just being there and seeing all of that. And, you know, I saw members of the media crying because they hadn't broken stories. I saw members of the media just get up and go, well, broke my story for the day and go home as if like their job was done for the day. I saw the entire Red Sox press corps. I wasn't in Boston at the time I was here. All get told by Theo Epstein that there was nothing else that was going to happen that night, and they all took off to go drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then Theo signed Carl Crawford or something, like some major deal, and they all had to come back, including one friend who had to go on television after he must have had 6-7 beers.
Oh, boy.
And he's on TV. I won't give the name, but he was on TV, like, trying to hold it together and do what he needed to do. I mean, like, crazy stuff happens, and it really – I loved it. It's obviously not at the same importance level as it was even 10 years ago. I'm not entirely sure how that's happened. I think some of it is just the fall of baseball as a national sport.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it, though, is
the game has changed.
Yeah, the game has changed. In the winter meetings, they just, you don't have the same level of intensity and drama and mystery that you had even 10 years ago.
And when you have 25 teams operating the same way.
That's right.
With a lot of the same methodologies.
You've got this luxury tax thing in place that hasn't been in place for a long time. So the opportunity for a team to say, you know what, forget it, I'm just going to go all in this year, that kind of has gone away for most teams.
These are the things baseball has to find a way to fix. It's not just the product out on the field, although that's obviously a big part of it. And we'll come back to that, I'm sure, this year and talk more about ways to make the game more competitive and have more action in it and all the problems that I think the statistical revolution has caused to the game. But some of it is this, like, you know, the guys like Kevin Towers were really valuable for the game of baseball. And by the way, beloved by everybody who worked for him,
GM of the Padres for a long
time. GM of the Padres. And I think the Diamondbacks for a little while, but he was a talker. He truly believed in just feeding information to the media, and he would have his lieutenants go out, and their job was to feed more information to them. He loved it. He wanted it to be a big circus where everybody had a little bit of information, and not just two or three guys. Everybody. He passed it around, and so everybody could talk to KT and get a little bit. He was an incredibly just nice, charismatic dude. You got to have those. Baseball needs it. You can't have people hiding in their ivory towers and refusing to talk to anybody.
Well, you've got two sports as well that you're competing against that never go dormant. The NFL is a 12-month entity. The NBA, in many ways, the offseason is more spicy and drama-filled and exciting how these teams are going to build than the in-season product, certainly for 6 months of the in-season product. Can you afford through November and December and January and February, and there's no major signings and the older players are relegated as people of the past, and I don't want veteran free agents, though Strasburg just got $240
million. Sure did. 7 years.
Yeah, the marquee guys are still at the very, very top getting
paid. But he didn't make it. It wasn't a big circus around Strasburg. Yeah. I mean, Gerrit Cole doesn't look like that's going to be much of a circus. He's just going to go to the Yankees. So, like, you know, a lot of the mystery and drama and third team in and a mystery team and all that.
It's not Mike Ilitch is not about to die and say, you know what, I'm going to spend $250 million because I want to see my team win. That's just not there anymore.
And the teams aren't bidding against each other. They're just like, yeah, all right, well, I'm not going to keep bidding. So you go ahead, you take them, and I'll go find somebody else. And it's not necessarily collusion, but it is operating similarly.
Guys say, you know what, we're better off with these 6 years of arbitration and young players' contracts and everything that we have.
So with that as a backdrop, what do you want Jerry doing down there in San Diego this year? Do you want him doing anything? One thought I have had, and it kind of came up in the Narvaez trade, because kind of look at the return for Narvaez, and my immediate reaction was, not that I thought he was incredibly valuable, but he had a pretty good offensive year. They seemed to show in the back half of the year that he could be a decent defensive catcher. And for a team that needs a bat at that position, Narvaez can hit, and he's going to be able to hit for a while now. I kind of thought you would get more than, what's the guy's name, Hill, and the number 70-ish pick in the draft. And then I kind of started thinking more about it, and I wonder whether or not, now that you can trade some of these draft picks, I wonder if they are going to be more valuable than prospects and in trades. And the reason I wonder about that is the teams seem to be getting better at identifying talent. They seem to be more and more overvaluing their own prospects because of not only their potential ability, but their controllability and cost effectiveness. So if teams are becoming less and less willing to give up real quality prospects in trades, are you better off acquiring more picks and using your own scouting department to choose the guys that you want?
You would think so. And you would think the methodology of that Narvaez move speaks to some of that, right? I mean, at some point, and we've said this for years and years and years, all I want is for you guys to be smarter than others. That's all I want. Not only smarter than any of the people covering your team or anybody talking about your team or anybody in the market. Like, I just want you smarter than your competitors. So how are you a step ahead? How are you two steps ahead? How can you do this? And, you know, to at least have a plan. I'll tell you this about Jerry and crew. Speaking of transparency, have you ever felt in all your years of covering someone more transparent than Jerry, both on and off the record? I mean, Jerry's a talker. Jerry tells you what they're going to do. I mean, he told the local folks, this is what we're going to do, right? He told anybody that would listen that this is going to be our plan, and we're going to trade Narvaez, and we're going to move these pieces last year, and we're going to do this, and we're going to reset this thing. And you just feel, you know, his transparency, and I'll take him at his word. No, they're not going to do much at the winter meetings, and they're not going to do much in free agency. that this is going to be hopefully a year that we see some of these young kids maybe make this roster initially as a surprise, or certainly in the second half of the 2020 season, see some of these young stars emerge and get their chance.
Some stories and rumors out there that maybe Mitch Haniger would be a possibility in a deal that the Diamondbacks might be interested in. Who knows? Maybe by the time the podcast comes out that deal's already done or something. But, you know, where are you with the idea of dealing Haniger? Because I'm against it. I'll just come out and say it. Last year, I wanted them to deal Mitch Haniger
badly,
when he was at the height of his value.
Yes.
And I think they, look, I can't say they messed up by not dealing him, because A, I don't know what was
they
on the table.
They didn't know he was going to blow a testicle.
No, even beyond that. Yeah. I don't know what was, they could have known that something was going to happen to him. He had been oft injured in his career and had really, really high value. Yeah. I don't know what was left out there for them to deal for. They'd already acquired a whole bunch of prospects, and I don't know how teams valued him. So it's not like I can look at it and say they screwed up, but I don't want them to deal him now when his value is down.
Agreed.
I do.
You do? You still want them to deal him?
Yeah.
Why?
I think that there's not much left that he can get back. I don't think that there's much more he could show this season that will change his value.
It is age?
This is age. He's coming up on arbitration. The fact is that he's not going to be signed to a long-term deal once he hits free agency, if that becomes the case. It's not going to change much of his value anyways, and he's not going to be a part of this thing moving forward. So whatever you can get now, move on. And honestly, if Marco Gonzalez has any value, I'd probably do the same thing, because guys who can throw 160 innings at a 4 ERA are not super special.
Are either of those guys more valuable at the trade deadline when they have had an opportunity, or even before in July? I mean, I don't know that I need to deal them at the winter meetings. To me, you wait on those guys. And
Marco
and
Gonzalez is the one that you could wait on.
Especially Marco. I mean, if he comes out and pitches pretty well and you come down to the trade deadline, everybody always needs pitching.
Yeah.
So I could see that as a possibility.
But for Mitch Haniger, I don't think there's much more he can do to gain his value back. He's like 29 years old. He's had a bunch of injury-riddled seasons. He's played well when he plays. That's always been the case. So the only thing you're going to prove is that he's currently hitting, which is everyone's going to count that if he's on the field, he hits. So I just think you trade him whenever you can.
It's a compelling argument. I still don't think I would do it, and I still think that he has more value to you than to somebody else. But if they do end up making a deal and bringing back at least somebody of some quality, I'm not going to be mad. You know, I'm not going to storm.
I don't want to get rid of him for nothing, but I think that the league's probably going to see some good value as a guy who's currently in his athletic prime, who should be totally back from the injury. It's way too long he spent rehabbing from it. And for the Mariners, I think that they should be identifying something down the line past this next generation that's going to like come in and actually continue run.
I'm just glad you're not romanticizing Mitch Haniger. I think that's a really important thing that's going on here.
This is Brock and Sox. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Whew, we had to goose the people a little bit for some questions, but they finally responded, Brock. A lot of Answer the Question Jerk questions coming through on Twitter. Hashtag ATQJ.
Yeah, what'd you say?
Number two trending hashtag in Seattle last night.
Whoa.
After that Monday Night Football game.
Big
people
time.
Have spoken. Everyone is talking about the Brock and Salk podcast.
Everyone.
Get on board or get out.
Yes.
No surprise. The NFL number one, Brock and Salk. Number two.
I love it. All right. Let's see. Answer the question, jerk. Has Brock heard anything regarding Eason's future plans? And what's his opinion on him going pro or returning?
I will be surprised if Jacob Eason comes back to school. So he'll make that decision in early January. Everything that I have felt, everything I've seen, everything I've heard, I don't think he wants to play in yet another system with a lot of new people around him, and will take his chances, even if it means that he falls out of a first round. I think that he is going to move on.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think we all knew that was going to be the case a long time ago. In fact, I'm pretty sure Howdy and I were saying that like 6 months ago.
Yeah, but Howdy was very confident he's going to be a top 10 pick. There's nothing he could do. He's going to be Josh Allen. He's going to be in the first round.
Yep.
And I think some
played
of that,
his way out of that
confidence has waned.
Has he? I was going to say, Howdy hasn't moved on.
No.
Wow.
He still will be at least the third quarterback taken in this draft.
Wow. Very impressive. Wow. Jerks, now that Salk is the king of Christmas, what holiday would the other three of you be the king of?
Ooh.
Wow.
For the record, I'm not the king of Christmas. I'm just Mr. Christmas. I don't want
to
exaggerate
record, you're
my power.
Not anymore with your droopy tree.
You don't get to decide that.
Well, man,
I named my.
I don't think you do either.
I think Kyle would be Thanksgiving. Kyle is a thankful guy.
Might be like
you enjoy
Fourth of July. I'll be in my trailer.
Well, that's true.
Yes, Kyle's a summer guy.
There you go. That's fair.
He He might actually be a Memorial Day guy.
Whoa, respecting like, the troops?
Yeah, well, and it's just early. It's the beginning of summer, right?
Yeah, you're
still
that.
Willing to go out in the camper
as
early.
As much as anything, I'm a Labor Day guy because I'm in Pullman. I watch
there
the Cougs, and I take that week off. I go to Glacier.
Mr. Labor Day.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Right. Labor Day.
I'd like to be Easter guy.
Yeah, that, obviously. Give me an Easter. Actual religious holiday.
Give me the resurrection.
Right. Yeah, yep. Brock's into the resurrection. Howdy, what's
you
left
stuck
for you?
Me with
Thanksgiving.
That I don't really care
you're
about.
You're an eater.
Stuffing.
I
you
am,
just said it. Stuffed.
I am.
You stuck and you stuffed me
it's
with
It's not my favorite holiday,
what
but
is?
I'll take it. Christmas is my favorite holiday.
I'm already Mr. Christmas.
I know. I said you left me with nothing.
It. The thing is, I obviously.
4th of July is an amazing one. I love the 4th of July, but I don't spend
tree?
A lot of money
how's
there.
Your tree?
My tree is excellent.
Christmas?
I cut it down myself at a private farm that
a
I found
private farm?
Yes. Limited access.
Oh, howdy.
Cut it down myself.
So you have an elitist tree?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Involved at church in the choir, but unfortunately, Mike, the
yes.
Jewish
right.
Mike, has already laid claim to Mr.
Yes.
Christmas.
Yes. But here's the
and
thing.
Sorry, Howdy.
I'm designing Christmas services, singing Christmas songs for a month at
nah,
church.
Sorry.
Christmas is probably my fifth favorite holiday.
Unbelievable.
I mean, my favorite.
Don't, Mr. Christmas, I do not
well, but that's
hear
why
that
I became Mr. Christmas.
Yeah, I laid claim to this, but.
Eh, whatever.
I had to be Mr. Christmas
it.
In order to get into Christmas. Otherwise, I'd just hate it.
It's still self.
So what is it? President's Day?
Number one?
Valentine's Day?
No.
He's
Thanksgiving
tax
one.
Day. He's huge into tax
Thanksgiving
day.
One.
Oh, tax day's Brock's day.
4th of July 2.
It's his birthday.
Yes.
New Year's 3. New Year's the most underrated holiday
you do
now.
Like
New I
Year's
love
most
New Year's
overrated
Eve.
Holiday.
I know. Everyone says that. And now it's become underrated because it's actually great. I love New Year's. Christmas is, yeah, Memorial Day is probably 4th because it's the beginning of summer.
Mm.
Christmas is like 5th. Somewhere in that range. Let's see. Jerks. Better way to cook a great steak on the grill, in a cast iron skillet, or other?
Grill me.
Grill.
Grill me.
The
grill.
Best way to cook a steak is to go to a nice steakhouse and have them cook it for you.
New barbecue, by
There's
the way.
There's nothing you can do as well as they do.
Yep. New barbecue.
You just can't make it hot enough.
Yeah, mine's going to get up over 700 degrees now.
Yes. It won't be as
that's
good.
That's child's play, but nice. Good okay. for you.
Right. I mean,
some infrared plate.
That sounds
there?
Cute.
That's what I've got.
I mean, I know the broilers are set at 1,500 degrees yes. over there at Daniel's.
Obviously.
So
you're almost halfway there.
But give me the grill.
Jerk, should I buy my wife a Peloton for Christmas? You know?
Oh,
that's become very charged.
Ooh, yeah.
What was up
that's
with
a loaded
that?
Question.
Yeah. Oh,
that is loaded.
I think you
want to
weigh into this.
Question.
Don't wade into this.
Jeez.
Brock will weigh into it. Brock's happy to.
Take it down
it's all about
a notch.
Fitness.
Golly, everybody.
Buy yourself a pre-core and move on from the pretension.
Down a notch.
Man.
Exactly. Gosh. Have you done a Peloton, by the way?
Have I?
Yeah, have you
no.
ever tried it?
No, my buddy Nate's obsessed with it.
No, never seen one.
He does it all the time.
No. Did I get on an exercise bike? No.
Yeah. How do you,
then how do you spend $3,000 on a bike
hold
plus
on.
A monthly subscription?
Hold on.
No.
Let me ask Howdy and Kyle a legitimate question. Just a health question.
Ready.
The last time you had a good workout where you just broke a sweat like in a health-minded
But the last time Howdy broke a sweat? It's the last time he walked to his car.
Sweating right now.
No, in a health-minded way.
2 weeks ago, I played some nice pickup basketball.
Good.
Oh, I was
going
to say, does basketball,
sure.
only basketball. Okay, sure. yeah, get a good
So you've been playing some basketball?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good for both of you guys.
I mean, a good like weightlifting session. Then.
Right. No.
Decade. Wait, it's too heavy. I don't do it.
I've been doing a lot of skating.
What?
A lot of ice skating.
Like rollerblading?
Really?
No, a lot of ice skating. And I've been thinking more and more about joining an adult league and trying to play hockey. I've never played before. I never played as a kid. I mean, I love the sport, but I've never played. I've been thinking more and more about maybe trying to play hockey.
You're skating backwards a little better now?
I'm getting there. I mean, not well enough to play it at any sort of reasonable
level.
So
are the kids doing a bunch of ice skating then?
Yeah, we've been going up a lot.
Lessons?
We go up to Linwood and skate up at the ice center there.
For your sake, I hope that this is different than every other adult male rec league
sport. I know, I'm just going to get hurt.
Because every other adult rec league sport for men is people playing three levels below their competency.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
To wreck everyone.
No, there's a couple around that both have, like, learn to play. I mean, like, you're starting at the very, very
You're
going to
get former high school hockey
Come
players.
On.
You know,
are not.
Now, you
yes,
know who's
you
a big men's league hockey guy?
Bob
Schusen.
Bob Schusen.
Oh, yeah, I can see
that. Bob Schusen's workout.
I could see that.
And he actually says, and it should not be a surprise, and I would think it would be the best men's league to play in. There's a level of, like, respect. And you don't do stuff like that. Like, you kind of
You better hope.
Hockey has some honor to it.
Agreed.
Has some respect
there's
to
code.
It. Yeah,
there's a lot of code to hockey. Here's the problem that I'm discovering, though, as I was sort of thinking. First of all, the price barrier to entry is pretty high on hockey.
Yeah.
It's like $1,000 to buy skates and gear and all of that stuff. So that's a pretty high, like, you better want to do it and be sure you want to do it before you drop a grand on all the stuff. But the other part is, I don't have a garage, and our basement is in use. It's not like an unfinished basement.
Stinky gear.
Where do you keep hockey gear, which, if you don't know, is roughly the smell of a dead body. Like, it's as bad a smell. Like, I used to go into the hockey trailer occasionally, because I wouldn't even let them in our locker room in high school.
Right.
They had their own trailer, which they, like, they all got whooping cough.
We have
because
space in this
disgusting.
Building. We got space in this building.
Bring it here?
Sure.
Get out of here. You bring that here, I'll throw it in the
That's
garbage.
Like microwaving fish. Like, there's no way I'm bringing hockey gear into
You're gonna
this
have
building.
To build a shed.
I'd have to, right?
Yeah,
in order to store my gear.
How do you build your shed?
I'll build
he
you
owes
shed.
You anyway.
He does owe me. I might trade That's him the point. Tree thing for a shed.
What do you do with your shed. Where's your lawn equipment? Where's like your edger and your lawnmower?
That's outside in like under the deck.
Under the can oh, you do it down
the
there?
Porch or something?
Yeah.
There's like
a little
there.
Yeah, I guess I could. Can you keep it outside? I guess you can.
Sure. That'd be great. Put it on freezing.
Shake the slugs off.
The raccoons will love it.
They'll love the smell. Yes. It'll probably keep everything away from, like, I'd be more worried about vultures. Like, there's a dead body in there. Let's go.
Tell Heather to shake off the snails in the morning. You'll be fine.
I'll tell you what. I went yesterday to the NHL Seattle spot down there on 2nd Ave. To choose our seats for Bonneville, Seattle.
Oh.
We have some seats for the for our company here.
Oh.
And so I went down and it looks pretty awesome, not going to lie.
And so did you choose the seats?
Yeah.
So what how?
They
weren't inside
no,
the
but
arena,
I mean what
sure.
the like the amount of like
you
virtual
put on some
reality
VR
stuff.
Goggles? I was
it's
gonna
not
say.
No, it's no different than you would find on a computer screen. Like if you go to a Ticketmaster or something and click like the view from each seat, it's just a lot nicer and with a much better monitor and stuff. And yeah, we got great seats.
And mascot and colors come out soon, right? All star
game said first quarter. Of
it sure looks like it's gonna be red and black. I mean everything down there is red and black.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta imagine that it's gonna end up being red and black. Are you into that?
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
I think that'll look pretty
What's the other compliment? You're going to have a third, right? Red and black will be the main, but then you're going to have a slice of something.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it'll be. White, maybe?
I like gray.
Gray, yeah. Sure. That would look sweet. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. It just my dad, whenever I talked to him, was like, what's going on with the hockey team? I'm like, Dad, still 2021. Yep. You're still like, you're 2 years away. No matter how many times you ask, it's not going to get moved
we're getting
up.
Closer, though.
But we are getting closer.
Right
we are now under 2 years.
Yep.
They were supposed to be going. This coming fall, 2020.
Yeah.
That would have been
how
amazing.
Sweet would that have been? Mm. I know. Pretty
you
amazing.
See the work they're having to do to salvage that stupid roof, by the way? Oh, my gosh.
It is currently suspended entirely.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, but with all the seismic protect control, can you imagine the amount of gosh for that roof?
Pretty amazing.
That roof.
Jerks, what do you think of a bring-your-own mug party? No. Well, why?
Huh?
Why would you bring your own mug?
Mugs are really important to some people. Like,
is that
they
true?
Have a lot of identity around their mugs.
For an eggnog party or a hot cocoa party or something like that?
When my mother-in-law comes in, my wife and my mother-in-law together must go through 35 mugs in a day. I don't understand. Like, our dishwasher will be totally empty and not need to be run except for all of the mugs.
Mm.
It's crazy.
A lot of tea. Wow.
A ton of tea.
Sure.
Non-stop tea.
Yep. And each mug tells a story, Mike.
Is that true?
Yeah.
This is the one I poured and didn't drink because the kids wanted me to do something. This is the one I poured and didn't drink because I forgot about it and I lost it.
Molly.
This is the one I poured and didn't drink because I left it in the bathroom.
This is the one this I found in the microwave the next day and forgot that I had reheated.
This is the one I poured and didn't drink because it was time to go and I poured it 3 minutes before it was time to leave the house. That's why we have 30 mugs.
Sure.
All right. I got the kids' winter concert tonight.
Ooh.
Oh, right. Big time.
What are they doing?
I don't know. Singing?
In Japanese?
Hopefully.
Ooh, a I'd Japanese like Christmas.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
With a little luck, Kyle. With a little luck. All right. We'll be back next week. Right? You don't have somewhere to be, do you?
What is next week?
You don't have anything to do, do you?
It is the 10th, 17th next
week?
Yeah,
I guess I'll
you're
be
in?
Back next
all right.
Week,
yeah. We'll do this again next week. It's been a pleasure. Until
it's more
next
fun
week.
After wins.
It
way.
Is.
So
I know.
On,
let's cut this thing short.
Get back to business.
Hey.
In Carolina. Barn.
See you.
This is the chopper!